Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, bringing you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events on Wednesday, January 22nd, 2014. Once again, thank you for joining us this afternoon. A great program it will be today. And let's see, we have bull today down 380. At 1,237, we have silver down 9 cents today at 1,988. Platinum was up four at 1,461, and we have palladium down two at $751. USDX is up eight at 81.16, and crude oil today was up $1.80. Probably with a lot of the comments reference to Russia and all the warships and all that talk. Crude oil up $1.80 at 96.77. Paper markets today traded down slightly at the Dow 80 points at 16,373. The NASDAQ up 17. 42.43, and we have the S&P up one at 1,844, the 10-year yield that was also up plus 0.4 at 2.86. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody. Apparently we have, I'm not sure what's happening here for sure, but your sound is garbled. And what we need to do probably is get a new connection between yourself and the producer. So I will sit here and chatter. If it's all right with you, I'll chatter for a while. Find something to talk about, and you can make a reconnection with Frank and see if we can get a better connection. Is that all right?
That'll work.
All right, let's try it. All right, let me talk a little bit about here's the Davos meeting. This is an article from Yahoo Finance, and it says, the headline is, from Goldie Hawn to Bill Gates, the most powerful people in the world are gathered in Davos, Switzerland, to save the world and find their zen. The article says, the president of Iran, Bill Gates and Goldie Hawn, are gathering at the tiny Swiss resort of Davos this week to discuss the global domination and beliefs and, excuse me, and the benefits of meditation for stressed out billionaires. That's not a setup. to a joke. It's actually part of the agenda for this week in Davos, Switzerland, at the 44th Annual World Economic Forum. On Thursday, Goldie Hawn will be heading a panel discussing mindful meditation. She will be joined by a Buddhist monk to discuss how meditation can enable more focused and hopefully altruistic behavior. Well, boy, I can't tell you how impressed I am by that. I feel better about the U.S. and global economies already. Goldie Hawn and a Buddhist monk are going to enable businessmen and government officials to mediate or meditate in order to become more altruistic. The world is saved. The article continues. It says, it's been a long, weird trip for the World Economic Forum since 1971, when a European economist held a meeting to discuss the philosophical relationship between commercial enterprise and social responsibility. And this year we've got invitation-only collection of 2,500 delegates will compete for time in the spotlight and speaking part of any of the 220 presentations in the course of 5 days. That's 44 presentations per day. The theme of Davos 2014 is reshaping the world. And when you see what's happening there, and when you hear what's going on, it appears that they intend to reshape the world by a bunch of dilettantes, wannabes, and escapees from Laugh-In. The article describes it as a willful celebration of its own importance. And what I'm getting to is, oh my gosh, they make a big deal. Oh, they're meeting in Davos, Switzerland. Oh, big deal. This whole thing sounds like just another excuse for rich people to go get drunk, get high, sleep around, do a little skiing, and tell the folks back home that they went to Davos. For me, I don't know who these people are at Davos exactly, but it doesn't sound like these are the real, the people that are running things. These are people that are trying to get on the A-list. And I think they'll probably always be on the B list. I'm not sure. Melody, are you back?
I am.
Okay. I'm not sure if your sound is much improved, but what do you think about Davos? Did you hear what I had to say?
Yes, I did.
All right.
It's hard to tell. I mean, these are business leaders. I just think it's a level I agree with you. I don't... Some of these are part of the, 85 folks who own most of the wealth. They're probably a tier underneath. But, I'll guarantee you there's a lot of deals that are brokered through this meeting. But I certainly don't think it's any of those deals that are brokered are good for any economy in the world except for the fat cats. Pocketbooks, but it's just another sign that says we're not in and not getting any better.
It's just more comedy. It's more ridicule.
They need these people. They need these people to help promote with the illusions that they've created. This morning I saw an interview with a guy from Ford. He's complaining about the currencies on these free trade agreements. He says the currencies have to be addressed. He says some of them work, but some of them don't. And it's not about getting rid of the trade agreements and bring manufacturing back to the U.S. He's talking about fixing the world currencies and so they can be more competitive.
So. Yeah. Following that line, speaking about global free trade, and that's what we're essentially talking about, I saw an article by Mish Shedluck recently where he pointed out that all demand is local, as in supply and demand. The demand is local. In other words, if I want a steak, I want to eat that steak for dinner tonight, and I want to eat it here at Dallas, Texas. But he goes on to say all demand is local, and it used to be that supply was also pretty much local. But now, thanks to globalism, the supply has gone international. And the question becomes, even though I want a steak and I want to eat it here at Dallas, where's the cheapest steak I can get? Is it right outside of Dallas from some of the cowboys who live just down the road? Is it from some cowboys in Oklahoma? Or maybe some gauchos down in Argentina? The point is that the world is changing thanks to globalism. And this is, for me, this is a profound point. We're talking about all demand is local. It used to be that if I wanted a steak, I had to get that steak from someone who lived close by who raised cattle. That's no longer true. Now if I want that steak, I may be getting my steak from Argentina, or who knows where it's coming from. Huh? And the same thing with everything else. The demand is local, but the supply is now global. And this is a bad thing. This is what's wrong with this system. It's great for the multinational corporations who are able to span the distance from the local demand to the distant supply. They stand to make a bunch of money. But it used to be that if I wanted that steak, I want the steak at Dallas, I got to buy it from somebody who lives in Dallas. It means that my demand went into whatever I paid for my demand for that steak, it went into my local economy. It helped to support my local economy. I wanted a steak, the local farmer who raises cattle made a few dollars selling a steak. But now if I have a demand, I may have a demand, but I may get my product from China or Japan or Argentina or someplace in Africa or Mexico or wherever. And the result is anyone who has money to demand things is probably in a fairly wealthy place. But when he makes that demand and the supply comes from a distant location, thanks to globalism, the money is going out of his economy. If I buy that steak now, it doesn't help enrich the local farmer. Instead, it takes the $9, $10, whatever it costs for that steak, and it sends it to Argentina. And there's a problem here, because it means that any community that's relatively wealthy, any economy that's relatively wealthy, will necessarily be buying products from distant suppliers. And as they do, they will strip the currency out of their local economy. The demand is local, but the supply is global. You will take local currency. It'll disappear out of your local economy. It will go to some foreign country, and they will be enriched, and your local economy will be impoverished. I don't know if I'm making this clear or people appreciate how significant this is, but it's a brilliant insight. And it's something that you can't do. You've got to live your life on the basis of if you want your house painted, you got to find a guy who lives in the neighborhood to paint your house. It's not just good for him, it's good for you to keep that money in your local economy. And the richer the people are in your local economy, the richer you are. But as soon as we start buying from those distant places, it means that the end result of globalism will be the reduction, the destruction even, of any relatively wealthy economy. Anybody who gets enough money to buy something is going to want to buy it cheap from a distant source. And when he does, he's taking money out of his economy, he's diminishing his economy, he's diminishing himself, his future, his children's future. It's an argument and an insight that points to the dangers of globalism. This isn't going to do well for the people. It's not going to do well for the vast majority of the people. It'll be great for the top 0.1%, perhaps 1%. They're going to do great. The majority of us are going to do badly. We're going to see our lives diminished, our standards of living diminished. We're going to see the American dream disappear. And we're going to do this while people cheer for globalism and for global free trade. It's going to get us. It's going to hurt you, folks. And if you're going to stick with it, you're going to pay a serious price before this is all over. Does that make any sense, Melody?
You know, it certainly does. And, you know, things are changing. I've come across some amazing articles, and you know, all these articles about the way the world is changing with technology and robots. I mean, it makes it like there's this new, you know, coming with you know, technology, and isn't it great? It's going to, you know, create jobs. And I mean, it's like, who are they kidding? Anybody with a brain, you would think, could see through it, but many people don't read between the lines, and they're easily influenced and believe the propaganda that is given to them. And certainly we see that in their finances and how they live their lives. But I just get surprised, Al. I mean, it's just in our face anymore. I can't believe people don't see through this. And are they really that hopeless? Are they really that...
And I think they're becoming increasingly desperate. And they are, and in that desperation, they have nowhere else to turn other than to some idiot who promises that they've got some new boondoggle that is going to generate more jobs. And the people need to believe that because they can't find any on their own. It's all nonsense. Well, I won't say it's all nonsense, but it's probably nonsense. And it probably won't create any jobs that are worth mentioning. And if it does, they won't pay much. But the people are desperate, and they want to believe that there's some kind of help coming their way. And I'm not, and I don't see it happening. You know, again, this globalism is going to gut the United States of America. The demand is local. The supply is distant. It means we're going to keep sending our money out of this country and sending it out of this country until we don't have any more money. I'm exaggerating, but still, when the supply goes to other people, they get to spend it. They get the value of it. Your neighbor does not. It will diminish. It will debilitate your economy. And it's one of these things that people are going to have to understand, and they're going to have to recognize this, and they're going to have to get hold of their congressmen and their senators, and if necessary, grab them by the scruff of their neck and tell them, look, we don't want globalism. We need to produce what we want to consume. It's important that somebody across the street is making, or someone down the block is raising the cattle that need to, that make the steak that I want to have for dinner tonight. We can't buy it from Argentina without diminishing ourselves. We can't keep buying our products from China. It seems like a great deal. Go to Walmart. Things are cheap. Yeah. But it contributes to the decline of your economy. It sucks the productivity out of your economy, sends it over to China. They're growing and we are diminishing, and it will continue to be that way until we get hold of our politicians and say we're not buying the crapola about global free trade. It has to stop. It has to stop for the sake of our own sake. It has to stop for the sake of our children and our grandchildren and the strength and prosperity of this nation. We're going to keep allowing that global free trade. We don't restore our tariffs. We're headed into a third world status. Most of us will live in poverty. The upper 5%, they'll do okay. 10% might get by. But 80, 90% are going to have trouble. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom, and we will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adisk, and this is Financial Survival. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom. Program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Got a special for them today, Melody?
I sure do. And I want to remind listeners, when you're buying your gold and silver, it's very important to purchase things that are recognizable and acceptable. And I always discourage against buying grams and buying silver by the pound. People don't understand the conversion. And usually whenever you buy something by the gram or the pound, the people who sell it that way, they're kind of depending on you not knowing, the large majority. Not everyone, but the large majority. So therefore, you end up paying a ton more than what you need to pay. I saw one advertisement for 30 for 1 gram gold, $73.95. Well, if you figure out what it is per troy ounce, you're actually paying almost $2,300 for an ounce of bullion gold, no better than a bar, probably
less. So you're paying
less.
Double.
Yeah, you're paying less than what a bar. I mean, when you go to sell it, you'll probably get less than what a bar would go for because it's not recognizable and acceptable. And when I saw these numbers, I thought, well, how in the heck do these people get away with it? And then the Valcambi bars, the same thing. You're paying over $2,200, $2,300 for an ounce of bullion gold. I mean, come on, it's going to be very important to get something that's recognizable and acceptable, and you'll want to get as much gold as possible for your dollar. So, and like 90% the walkers, we've got a bag of walking halves in here. I mean, they're a steal compared to what our competitors are selling them for. And it's like it doesn't even make sense, and I don't believe people actually buy it. But we got a ton of calls today on Walking Libs, so I guess they really do. But we got some great prices. So the special that we're running today, Mint State 62 $20 Liberty gold pieces and $65 face value of the 50-cent pieces Walking Liberties for a total of $2,014. That includes your shipping. So easy number to remember, 2014, Mint State 62, $20 Liberty gold pieces, and 90% silver, $65 face value of 50-cent pieces Walking Liberties, $2,014. That includes all your shipping costs. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. I even saw a silver round selling for almost $38. I was like, well, what's so special about this silver round that somebody would be willing to pay almost $38 for, when you can get 2 ounces of silver almost for the same cost?
Yeah, 2 ounces.
It's one of those, yeah, I don't get it. For what? Why? Well,
that's, you know, it's the P.T. Barnum philosophy. There's a sucker born every minute. And
folks,
some people understand that, and they take advantage of it, and they search for them, and they find them. And it's kind of odd, almost. You wouldn't think that these P.T. Barnum people would be able to find the suckers, but they do. And the suckers find them, and it's almost as if they have some sort of a natural affinity, a need to be taken advantage of. And sure enough, and if they do, they'll find somebody who can take advantage of them. It's odd. I mean, how can anyone be that foolish? It's hard to understand.
Well, you know what, Al? Maybe I'll make us a silver round for you and me. Melody,
you
and
make
Al,
an extra round. If you make it extra round,
speak for yourself.
More round than usual.
Why's that?
Then you get to charge extra. If it's extra round, or maybe if it's extra shiny, you get to charge extra.
It'll be the Al and Melody silver round. We'll put Ruby's face on it, and we'll charge $35. I don't get it, but you're right.
Strange.
But you know what, folks? Don't fall into their traps. And I've heard the arguments. I mean, and when you hear the arguments that they use, you know, think about it, people. Think about it. And we got William from Detroit.
William, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I just wanted to call in to confirm something that you said. Yes, P.T. Barnum is alive and well, and he works in the Congress of the United States of America.
Oh, yeah.
You were talking about globalization, and I wanted you to mention that I was calling in from Detroit. I worked for the city of Detroit. I worked in the private sector in the city of Detroit. And I can tell you that one of the reasons that people look upon Detroit in such disdain is exactly for the NAFTA agreement that was signed that has literally destroyed the city of Detroit. That's one of the biggest destroyers of this city and probably many other of the Rust Belt cities within the United States.
How many other cities depended on Detroit?
Contributor to the destruction of these cities.
How many other cities depended on Detroit? I mean, Detroit sold steel in the form of automobiles, and they sold rubber in the form of tires, and whatever the other materials and components went into the automobiles, they were also damaged. I mean, Detroit didn't manufacture all of that stuff, but they assembled it. The other cities that supplied the parts, they're hurting.
Yes, all these things have occurred, and if you want to know what the result of globalization and accepting the P.T. Barnum sales pitch is, all you need to do is look at the city of Detroit, and I can testify to that from all angles.
I've seen photographs. I don't know how bad I haven't visited Detroit. I don't know if I've ever been there, to tell you the truth. I'm trying to think if I did, maybe as a kid, something like that. We might have drove through when I was a kid. But I haven't been in Detroit in recent, 20, 30, 40 years, if maybe longer than that. I don't recall. But I've certainly seen photographs, and everyone has.
Yes.
Are those photographs of the devastation in Detroit? Are they really representative of the city, or are they only representative of a small part of the city?
They are representative of the city.
Yeah.
I don't want to reveal what I did, but let's put it like this. I had to travel around the city. I traveled every inch and centimeter of this city. I did it all times of the day, and it was for work. And there were times I would actually literally be in tears just watching the city as it looked like it had been bombed during the Vietnam era, because I knew what it once looked like. I'm 58 years old, so I've seen it from the heights to what is currently the condition it's in now.
I understand.
I can tell you, the change is devastating. It's devastating if you lived here.
And the point I'm trying to make to the audience is that if we're going to continue by knocking our tariffs down and demanding things here, I mean, again, the comment from that I was, Ms. Shedlick, he points out all demand is local. And traditionally, the supply was pretty much local, but now the supply is foreign. And it just creates a distortion that you can't survive. The whole country is going to resemble Detroit before we're done. Rather than Detroit being saved, we're going to fall into the same trap. Detroit is among the first to go, but it won't be the last. And we're going to keep declining until someone gets their head out of their hindquarters and says, we need high tariffs, we need to build our own cars, build our own computers, build our own washing machines, our own flat-screen TVs, and I've got to buy one from the guy across the street, not from someone who's working in Peking.
And then, believe it or not, Detroit built all those things.
Yep.
A lot of people don't know that, but we didn't just build cars here.
I understand.
Believe me. But
we moved industries overseas.
Yes,
you know, you must
have been moved over. We paid for that. We paid for that through foreign aid.
Yeah, I know. I know it's ridiculous. We've subsidized our own destruction. We pay people to make us poor. You know, it's insane. And it doesn't get done without the complicity of people in the Congress, in the Senate, in the White House. They understand. Not necessarily all of them, but a lot of them. They understand what they're doing. They do it anyway. It's good for big business. It's terrible for the vast majority of the American people. Nation is being torn down by its own government. What do you think we can do about it, William? What can you do about it in Detroit? Is there anything that can be done?
Detroit, the city itself, is the days of the past are gone. They're not coming back. Detroit will have to be reinvented, or I usually even call it the city formerly known as Detroit. But
yeah.
It'll have to be reinvented in some other form or fashion. But the days of the industrial strength and productive capacity, that's gone. I don't really foresee that ever coming back.
Why can't it ever come back? Why can't it ever come back?
It can't come back as long as they have NAFTA, GATT, and all of these foreign treaties, and the knocking down of the tariffs, as you spoke of before. Mm-hmm. As long as that's in place, then what happened here can only continue, and it's already gutted the steel industry. The steel industry is just like Philadelphia, the steel industry of Pittsburgh, or of Pennsylvania. All of these industries in Ohio and Indiana, all these industries are gone. They're not coming back here easily.
And here's why. They're not going to come back because they can't do anything locally that's sufficient to overcome what the government is doing nationally. What can
correct.
You do locally to overcome the fact that the tariffs have been knocked down at our borders? Detroit can't handle its problem locally anymore because we have a national government that has a different agenda.
Exactly. I'll give you an example. I used to work, I'm a mechanic.
Okay.
I do a little bit more than that. But when I go, about maybe 8 years ago, I went in to buy tools for that I needed to resupply with. And I went to Sears because I always like to buy American-made tools. But they came out with a second brand, which was kind of confusing at the time. Because, and so I had to sit there. I mean, I literally had to study the tool board to figure out which tool was made in America and which was made somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And a gentleman came up to me and he says, look, anything that says Craftsman usually should be made in America. Anything else will be, they have a sub-brand, which looks a lot like it.
Yeah.
But it won't have that Craftsman logo. But now you can't even say that now. The point I guess I'm just really trying to stress here is that this has already occurred. This has occurred in many other areas besides the city of Detroit. They're just not revealing it so much. Detroit was just a focal point upon which they could really pin that tail on. It's happened in many different areas. I've been to different areas. You mean the housing devastation, the downtown devastation, it's swept us like a hurricane. We just are not, I don't know that, the only thing you can do actually is try to buy local. I wouldn't, like, Michigan actually made shoes. The Wolverine brand shoes was for a part of Michigan. Ada, Michigan actually made those shoes. You can't buy those shoes here. And you can still buy them in Sears, but they're not made here. They're made in China somewhere.
Yeah.
So the best I could do is, I'll say this, go buy you some Red Wings. Go in there, because that's about the only place I know of that actually sell American-made shoes, but you have to request them, you know?
Special order. Special order get something actually made in America.
They're not special order. Look for the shoes with the American flag on them. They'll have a little American flag on the shoestring. And when I go buy work shoes or something like that, I specifically tell the salesman, don't bring me anything else but some American-made shoes, you know. So these are the kind of things you have to do.
Well, I understand that you have to do, but how many people do you think follow your example? Because I'll bet money that you're paying more for those American shoes than you would pay for something that at least looks comparable that's made in China. How much extra are you paying to buy American?
I myself don't think it's, I don't really think of it as being that much extra. Yeah, you can get a pair of $80 shoes, but, or you can buy the $150 pair, or even more. But I look at it like this. One of the things I did with a lot of the foreign made products is, some of them don't necessarily fit your feet very well. Or I know I've always had a problem walking in the Chinese shoes. Now, I'm not trying to knock China, but I'm just saying they gave me a problem.
Maybe they only work right on the other side of the world. Maybe it has something to do with global geography or something like that. Do you think that's possible?
I don't know. I just always had a problem with them. So I really, you know, was like, somewhere you got to draw the line.
Well, that's the question, though. Somewhere you got to draw the line, and this is what tariffs are about. Because I'll guarantee you that 90% of the people, if not 99%, we'd all like to buy American. But if we can save 20% or 30% by buying Chinese, we're going to take that Chinese product. We can all talk about it, but we'll go to Walmart. We're going to take that deal if we can get it. And the point is, you say you got to draw the line. That's essentially what the tariff barriers are. That's where the government draws the line and says, you got to buy your product that's made, or maybe you're in Detroit, you can't buy a product that was made any further than California, or maybe Hawaii or Alaska or out in Maine. But that's, we draw the line at the borders of this country, and that's where you have to get your products. And a lot of people say, oh, that's terrible, we have to pay more. Yeah, but it supports people. It's keeping people, it's holding cities together. I mean, it's crazy. The government is not drawing the line. And if they won't, we can't.
Well, I'll say this one.
We've got to take a break. We've got to take a break, William. It's time for our commercial announcements. Do you have more, or would you like to wait until we get done here?
Yeah, I'll wait just to make sure.
All right, we'll be back in a moment, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom and William from Detroit. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and we're talking to William from Detroit. And William is giving us some really, you know, it's kind of like firsthand observations. We can talk about the theory. We can talk about economics, and we can talk about a certain amount of theory, and it's kind of interesting on an intellectual level. But William is giving us firsthand experience of the consequences when the theory gets out of hand and people start doing things that are not for the benefit of the vast majority of the American people. We're all going to be hurt by this. William, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
I want to ask William a question, too, but go ahead.
Go ahead.
Today, the governor, Michigan's Governor Rick Snyder, he was supposed to announce his support for a state bailout for Detroit to help the city through its bankruptcy. This was supposed to release sometime this afternoon around 3:30. And, you know, they're trying to revitalize the city, you know, through the bankruptcy. But my question is about, you worked, I don't know if you have the Detroit's pension plan. We certainly know that it's underfunded, and, of course, people will be affected who has those plans. Have you been affected? Do you have their pension plan since you work for the city? And have they told you anything about, you know, how you will be affected?
Do you get that, William? It may be that William is no longer on the line. One of the things I would want to ask William, you'd mentioned that the governor was trying to had some program to revitalize Detroit. Now, if what we're saying on this program is valid, William doesn't think Detroit's coming back. I don't think they're coming back. I don't think they can come back so long as our tariffs are down. So what's interesting to me is, the governor really trying to revitalize Detroit? Or is he just throwing oil on the water and trying to just keep calm, keep enough calm where the whole place doesn't burst into flames? It looks like it's been bombed, but at least it isn't yet burst into flames. Is there a real effort to save it, or is it a fool's errand? So maybe somebody else has got an amp. Maybe someone else who's listening in Detroit, maybe you've got some insight and some commentary on that. And if you did, What's the number we call here, Melody? Do you know off the top of your head, or do I have to look it up?
I think you're going to have to look it up.
I'm going to have to look it up. All right. We'll get it to you in a minute. What else we got to talk about, Melody?
Well, you know, we talk about, and William is back. He is back on the line. So I don't know if he heard the question about, you know, if he has a pension fund with the city or not.
How's your pension fund looking, William?
Well, as far as I understand, the pension, so first of all, number one, the people who are affected by those by this bailout or just how you say this bankruptcy, they're not getting much in the way of information.
Yeah.
That's the first thing. A lot of people, some of them are in denial. And I actually foresaw this coming, believe it or not. I actually saw this one coming. It was not a surprise to me when it did happen. Majority of people don't seem to be in what I would call denial. They are under the impression that because of our state constitution, that their pensions cannot be diminished. That I myself was never under I don't even know what to call it. I was never under that
delusion.
I believe that any bill can be abrogated at any time, whenever the parties decide that, well, I've had enough of you. It's just like being married. You know, you go get a divorce when you're done.
Yep. No fault. No fault. Irreconcilable differences. The other party wants more money than I have, so I got to go.
Yeah. So, but a lot of but there's very little information filtering down to this rank and file. I can look out of my back window and see about two or three retirees, and you know, you'll hear nothing. Many people were, and because of these things, and many people actually left the city early, trying to avoid any kind of a diminishment of their pension plans or pension funds. But the problem is too big, actually, for the city or the governor to deal with. This is a national problem, and I can only say this to the American population. I will say this. If you enjoy slavery, if you want to see it come back to America, keep buying corn.
Yep. You know, it's a nice observation that Detroit is a national problem. A lot of people don't get that. They don't see that. They don't realize that what's taking Detroit down is the national government. And that's why nobody's going to fix this but Congress. Insofar as the governor of Michigan tries to make a difference or the people of Detroit try to make a difference, they're essentially helpless so long as we have a Congress that's not going to offer a national solution to what is a national problem, and the national solution is raise the tariff barriers and force industries back into this country, bring the jobs back into this country, make our own cars. And then
I would like to say one more thing, and that is one of the things I believe that everyone, and I've actually told many retirees or guys who were getting ready, guys and ladies who were getting ready to leave out of there, you know, if they had only have taken a little portion of their monies and put them into Melody's hands or someone like Melody's hands, they could have preserved a lot of their purchasing power and protected a lot of their pension. Because see, the city of Detroit offers what is called an annuity. They match your pension to a degree. You pay that portion, and you can, when you leave, take that with you, but you have to leave. That's the problem. And a lot of people are reluctant to do that.
You mean you leave the job, or you leave the city, or what do you mean you have to leave?
You leave the job. You can only touch those funds if you are no longer employed with the city of Detroit or when you reach retirement age. So, but if you had done that, you would have preserved some of your monies, because fell into play when the bankruptcy came into being.
You know what? You're right, William. I have a lot of clients who worked in the auto industry, and a lot of them bought gold and silver. And every time they would call and make an order, they would tell me how they tried to talk to their coworkers, and the word they used always was denial.
Yeah.
And you mentioned how you try to wake people up, and they're just in denial. So they weren't only just in denial about the destruction of Detroit, they're in denial about the destruction of this country.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
Yes, and that's exactly right.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what puts us in such great danger. If you're not going to face the problem, whatever it is, you're not going to escape the problem. You're certainly not going to defeat it if you just try to close your eyes, put your hand over your ears, and the rest of that sort of thing, and just pretend it's not there. And that's what we've been done. Let me ask you a question, William. Are you black?
Yes, sir. Yes, I am.
All right. I thought you probably were. And people, one of the things that happens with Detroit is Detroit from the outside is being blamed for its own problems, in large measure because the government of Detroit has become predominantly black. Do you understand what I'm saying? That the black people in Detroit are taking the heat on this, at least from a national perspective, and they're essentially saying, oh, those black people, they can't do anything. What we're talking about right now, this isn't about who's running the local government. This is a national problem we're seeing it appear in Detroit, and it's not because of the local government. I'm not arguing there's no corruption. I'm not saying anything like that. But the primary problem is not in Detroit. It's in Washington, D.C. The primary problem is not about blacks. The primary problem is about congressmen, senators, and presidents. Does that make sense to you? Do you understand what I'm saying here, or do you agree with what I'm saying?
Well, let's put it like this. I cut short my employment in the city because of the corruption. There came a point where you either joined the bandwagon and you became a corrupt person. But I have a saying, I like my hands to be dirty and my heart to be clean.
Well, that's good.
And I worked for the last administration meant for supposedly cleaned up most of the corruption. Don't believe that. Like I said, it's a very tight, knit organization. It goes all the way up to the top. Now, when I say top, I'm talking about the federal level, including the presidential office.
Yeah.
And then it filters back down. And if you don't believe me, I don't know what it's. I can give you examples, but I wouldn't do it on the air.
I understand.
That's all I would tell you.
When you tell me that the corruption is allegedly cleaned up, does that mean they've got more moral people in office, or does it mean that they've just run out of money to steal?
No, no. What it means is that usually what happens is there's what I would call a fall guy. The guy that gets caught finally, or the guy that is the guy that, we've got him, he's gone, which was the last mayor, actually. Not the last mayor, but the mayor before this last one. We've got him. He's gone. He's been the guy who was caught. Well, he had enablers. There were people who were always standing back in the shadows. I saw them. Believe me, I did. Yeah. And I can tell you, they're still there. Yeah. They're not gone. And still talking to people above them and people in Congress and people in the presidential's office. So it doesn't end like that. You don't get one guy or two guys, throw them in a prison, and figure you've got it all cleaned up. It doesn't work like that.
No, I understand that. And
just like Wall Street.
Yeah, it's like that. And it's like you see mafia movies where they complain about some mafia guy. The old bosses are complaining about the Teflon Don in New York City because he's got this big public persona. All right? And they're just saying it's just going to, in the end, it's going to make nothing but trouble. It's the same thing with being elected governor or being elected mayor or being elected to a position of high authority. The people that are dumb enough to assume those offices, they're the ones that are going to get hanged. The people that are really responsible, you don't even see their faces in the news. They're not even in the crowd shots. You don't know their names. The guy who get elected, he thinks he's sitting on top of the world. He's just a sacrificial goat.
Yes, and when he gets too high, they cast him out.
That's it.
That
sacrifice
simple.
another politician. You know, Blagojevich was a good example in Illinois. I don't know if you followed him or not.
Oh, I did. I have relatives there.
You know, he didn't have brains enough to sweep streets in Chicago, but he wound up taking the heat. I don't doubt they brought him and said, this guy will never understand what's going on. He's a perfect candidate. You know, plan B. We'll let Blagojevich do time. anything else you got for us? We're getting close to the end of the line here. William, you got anything else you'd like to say?
No, I'm going to. I appreciate your time, and I thank Melody for her service. Like I said, I've given her number to numerous people. Some of them have made orders. And I wish everybody luck, because I do not think that you're going to actually turn this around.
No. No, I don't think so. Not until you get control of Congress, Senate, and the White House. And tell them to do what's best for the American people, not for the New World Order and global free trade and the multinationals. Take care of the middle class, and this whole country will be strengthened enormously. Don't take care of them, we're going down the pipe. William, thank you for your call. We hope you'll call another time. We enjoyed talking to you.
It's been my pleasure.
Thank you.
Okay. Have a good evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you, William.
No, that's... I mean, that was, from my perspective, a good phone call. I mean, talking to somebody who's got his boots on the ground where there's serious trouble and getting straight answers. Not just theory, but this, you know... That was insightful. I thought it was a good situation. What do we got, Melody? Minute and a half left to go? Something like that?
Something like that.
A minute and a half, day and a half. I don't know. We'll have to call Frank. How much time do we have left, Frank? Do you know? Here's one we can talk about in the last minute and a half of the program. Representative Louis Gohmert drops health insurance. He's in Congress. Thank you very much, Obamacare. That was his comment. Representative Louis Gohmert, Texas Republican, said he's had to drop his health care coverage because Obamacare has made it too expensive. All right? He says, I lost my health. Let me see that. He says, the deductible rate doubled about $3,000 to $6,000, and our policy was going to go from $300 a month to $1,500 a month under Obamacare. So here's a congressman who's 60 years old. He's got a 59-year-old wife, and he says he can't afford health care anymore, so he's had to drop it. Now, this is great. This is a wonderful story from my perspective. There's a great deal of irony because these are the people who voted for Obamacare after Nancy Pelosi said you got to vote for it so you can see what's in it. Well, now they know what's in it, and they found out even they can't afford it. I find this to be great irony. I find it to be justice. I find it amusing, even impressive. The idiots in Congress are being made to bear the weight of their own idiocy. How delightful. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, William, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.